Mr. Postman, deliver my ballot. Please, Mr. Postman, deliver my ballot and send it to where it needs to go to record my vote. That, of course, is something many Americans doubt after the last couple of weeks. Yesterday, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy testified to a Senate committee about his decision to destroy mail sorters and take postboxes out of public access, a move that was praised by President Trump, who posted that if the post office didn't work, people won't be able to vote by mail. But, say our guest today, Nevada's election will be fair and inclusive, even if the Postal Service disintegrates into thin air. Senator Jackie Rosen is on the Senate committee that held those hearings. We're going to talk to her in a moment. And we're going to talk a little bit about the logistics of this election and how you can make your vote count. But first, the news. We're going to look at the numbers as we usually do. We are now at 5.5 million cases of coronavirus in the U.S. According to COVIDtracking.com, 165,000 plus people are no longer with us since the start of this pandemic in March. In Nevada, we're at 63,000 cases with 1,134 deaths. Currently, 160 people are on ventilators in the state, and the Southern Nevada Health District felt compelled to put out a press release this week commemorating that Las Vegas has passed 1,000 deaths. I'm going to bring in Rebecca Colbert. Rebecca is the Director of Acquisitions for the Clark County Library, and she is also one of the people behind CCSD Parents Facebook group, which is hopping right now. We're going to get to that in a moment. So I want to take this and lead into the Democratic National Convention, which is the national story of the week. I feel like we have the Trump administration has knocked down so many norms that the America and the government that we expected to work doesn't work the same way it did 4 years ago. Like the latest thing I heard is that Trump is trying to stack people on the Federal Reserve, which is supposed to be a total independent body. And I feel like the aghastness about that has sort of been muted also. And this convention kind of highlights that for me because I've tweeted this and I put this on Facebook. I feel like this convention is all, it's one huge live documentary about hope. And look at all the wonderful things about our country. Have hope in the future of our country. We represent hope. And it was surprising to me. Like, I haven't felt that in a while. I haven't seen that in a while. Have you been watching this thing? What's your take on it?
Yeah, I did not know that I was still capable of feeling hope, quite honestly. Sometime in year three of this presidency, I think it died. I gave up. I said, I'm going to hold my breath. And then I started watching and I thought, oh, yeah, this is what it feels like to believe in your politicians. This is what it feels like to believe that the institution can actually help us. Right. And this is what government is supposed to do. The more I watch it, the better I feel. And I'm pretty sure that that high will wear off pretty quickly once the Republican convention starts. But the unified tone, the focus on optimism, the focus on we have to do the work, but it's more important than ever. Yeah, I'm really drinking the Kool-Aid and I feel that same hope. And so I don't feel that the Republicans are on the same page, which is why it will be so interesting to watch their convention.
It's also really, this convention is really well produced. And I have to say that I've tuned out of past conventions because the camera's way up in the press box and maybe they have some other cameras on the floor, but it's you know, what's happening on the screen when there is a produced package is a shot by the camera. Like, it's not on our television screen. What's on our television screen is the whole hall and the screen in the background playing this produced package. And we really don't see it because everybody's talking. And then, you know, when the person who got to know Joe Biden in an elevator or whatever comes and speaks, that's not necessarily a primetime thing. So we don't hear it. We don't see it. It's kind of a mess. this produced for our living rooms package that they put together is really good. It's really well done. It does worry me a little bit, though, as a media critic, as a longtime media critic, that they are using the same manipulative tactics that advertisers use to get us to buy things that we don't need.
So it takes a reality show to beat a reality show incumbents.
That was perfect. I'm going to end with that. We're going to move on here. The reality show in the last couple of weeks has been the post office, and we've got some stories this week on what's going on with the post office. Susie Lee had a press conference, and I'm going to play a clip from the press conference right now. One of the solutions, of course, if the ballots come to our houses, is to fill them out and take them to a drop box. Are the libraries going to have voting drop boxes?
I assume that we will. In the primary back in June, we did host a drop box that was staffed with election staffers helping people submit their ballots into the drop box.
Okay.
And most libraries are polling places. And so those libraries that were polling places, I assume, will host drop boxes if drop boxes are available.
All polling places will have drop boxes.
Then you can bet on it. And, you know, our gate count was super high that day. There were an awful lot of people coming in to drop off ballots.
So we get to CCSD in particular. What have you been hearing from people as we've been preparing for distance ed here?
Well, I'm hearing that enrollment overall is down at least 10,000 right now from what we expected. And I suspect those are either folks who are withdrawing just to homeschool or folks that just never bothered to register this year because they're going to homeschool. Hmm. A lot of panic about the technology. But let's face it, if a parent is panicking this week about the technology, they're already more engaged than a lot of parents who won't understand what's happening until next week.
Ah.
And I don't think there's a principal in town that will be surprised if no one shows up or if people show up at their school Monday morning thinking that school is going to happen.
No way.
Parents will be there with kids to drop off, I promise you. And we've tried, CCSD has tried so hard to communicate and get kids technology and get kids lined up for where they need to go to get their breakfast and lunches. And it's just impossible to herd this many cats into something totally different that's never been done before.
Now I kind of want to go to a school Monday morning with a microphone.
I do.
Yeah.
Except that I'm going to be home fighting the internet.
I want to talk, though, about this enrollment going down. I do know a few people who are like, oh, no, we're going to private school now, or we're homeschooling now. But there's this thing that happened in North Las Vegas. I'm not really sure I understand. I think Las Vegas is doing it also, where the city is working with a private school to teach kids in a sort of daycare school setting and charging them.
As much as I understand it, the city of North Las Vegas is experimenting with micro schooling. And it's only North Las Vegas right now. Las Vegas proper and Henderson have not done this, and Clark County has not. And so they enter into a contract with a micro school partner, provider, a group that's willing to staff basically a day camp with people and technology, and the city lends the actual facility, the space, and the same space and the same staff will allow your child to come and do their CCSD distance ed for $20 a day. But this is the heinous part. If you disenroll that child from CCSD and use the micro school curriculum, which I don't trust because it's from a school choice charter group,
right?
And it doesn't demand licensed teachers, and it's canned national curriculum. You can only pay $2 a day to have your child in a safe place to learn. And I find it reprehensible. I really do.
So
I understand that micro schools are a necessary evil right now, and they're kind of like the pandemic pods that pop up where people get together and try and teach each other privately.
Right.
But having a municipality encourage disenrolling from your county school district is unthinkable.
Interesting, which can bring us to a reorganization conversation, right? If North Las Vegas is really saying, oh, you know, we don't really care about CCSD, then that's one of the arguments that can be used in this school district needs to be broken up. It's too big.
Well, it's true because I had, you know, a couple of thoughts. One is that, okay, they can't keep teachers in a lot of these North Las Vegas schools, and yet so many of them are the Zoom schools and the victories and the turnarounds that get extra funding. Mm-hmm. And so if North Las Vegas chooses to disassociate from CCSD, I would be glad to redirect that funding to some Title I schools in the other suburbs.
Yeah.
But I think it's a disaster because even if just 500 kids, which I think is the capacity North Las Vegas can have right now, if 500 kids disenroll from CCSD, that's roughly $7,000 less per child that CCSD is going to get operationally for the whole district. And it's my problem with school choice and with educational mm-hmm. savings accounts and mm-hmm. with public funding for private ed. It will kill CCSD.
We will see. I want to talk a little bit about privacy. You had to sign some sort of waiver to have your kids on Zoom. Or go, you know, or not Zoom, Google.
Google.
It's to important to note that it's Google, Google Classroom. Go ahead.
This kills me. You know the superintendent has been saying for a month now that we will have synchronous and asynchronous learning and all the live lessons will be recorded so that if your kid is not in front of a computer with you during the day, they can watch these lessons at night. So I've been to my virtual orientation at both schools. I've communicated with teachers, I picked up materials, and today, 3 days before school starts, I have an email form, a waiver to sign that says, I will allow my child to be recorded in a live lesson.
Oh my God.
And the story, the backstory is that some principals have not been convinced that live recordings don't violate FERPA laws. Well, the FERPA law is vague enough that I think they probably do allow it. But some principals are uncomfortable, and those principals are pushing out a waiver at the last minute. But couldn't we have not thought of this in July?
No, because we didn't have a plan in July. In July, we were still planning to go back to school 2 days a week and learning from home in a hybrid model.
We don't have a plan now. Teachers have plans. Individual teachers whose job it is to wake up Monday morning and instruct, they have all the plans in the world.
So I want to talk now that we're on privacy about this software that CCSD has been using called GoGuardian. Now, I have heard teachers, I think it was Jen Hanel, who told me that that she saw that there was somebody had a Chromebook and went to visit some porn websites, and the kid was only 7 years old, but she had to call the parent and say, your child has visited a porn website, just sort of as a warning that, you know, maybe the person in the house that really did this shouldn't be doing this and should know that we could see what websites you visit. But that's an interesting, you know, on a Chromebook, that's one thing. I don't particularly like it. I think it is a privacy issue. I think that you could have a piece of software that allows you to connect and have control over a screen and then let you go after the class is done. But right now, from what I've been able to tell, this GoGuardian software is part of the G Suite, the Google Suite that we use here at CCSD, and that any computer that signs in to their Google Classroom account can be seen. Now, how much it can be seen is a question. We know that they can see what websites that you've signed into. If it's a website that you actually have to sign in, like Netflix or something like that, they can't see what movies you watch because they don't know your password. But they can see that you've gone to Netflix, and they can see what time of day you've gone to Netflix. And they can possibly, I'm checking to see if they can, like if my kids, we have Macs. So if my kids are in class and there's a session that has been started, a GoGuardian session, and we're talking about two different things here, right? A GoGuardian session actually allows a teacher to interact with kids And that whole session is recorded. So my question is, if my kids are in a Go Guardian session during class and I text them and say, hey, what do you want for dinner? Is she going to see that text? I don't know.
Maybe.
I've got some people doing tests. Yeah.
And I know that the teachers have been playing with it by trying to log in as students, like making up student accounts, just to understand the functionality and the reporting of it, mm-hmm. because their back end looks far different from a student's use of it. It was actually my daughter who pointed out to me about the need for signing into her school Google account in order to make everything work. Mm-hmm. Because like every kid, she has 4 or 5 Google accounts.
Right.
And when we weren't signed in with her CCSD account, we couldn't magically get to the Clever site and access Canvas and see everything we needed. And I didn't realize that Canvas and Clever were that smart or that they were all so connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told dozens of parents literally the last 48 hours, make sure you're signed into the right Google account. And I've said, you know, stay logged in, but you're pointing out very correctly that no, you only want to sign into that school Google account when you're doing schoolwork.
Right.
And then you want to sign right out of it.
Right. So there are two parts to this. One is during class, if a teacher starts a session, she can see you and she can interact and you can go in your pods and what have you. The other part, though, is that if you are signed into your CCSD Google account in any way, shape, or form, they, at the very least, they can see what websites you're going to. Now, this was the selling point of this is if a student is looking up the word suicide, how to kill yourself, if a student is looking up something about guns, then that we can maybe catch the student before something happens. So I get that part of it, but it still bothers me. It's still an invasion of privacy.
Well, and the same faction, though, that is worried about, well, I shouldn't assume, part of the faction that is worried about students interacting with teachers online, worried that somehow insidious bad teachers are going to say inappropriate things mm-hmm. to their children, should be happy for something like Go Guardian because it's monitoring that activity.
Mm-hmm.
But that same crowd is very unhappy because their child's being monitored. You can't have it both ways.
Good point. A very excellent point. I just want to make sure that, you know, if my kids are using my computer and they sign out of my Google and into their Google, I want to make sure that all of my tabs are off so that they can't.
Absolutely.
Right. So that somebody, because you can keep the CCSD keeps this for 30 days. So that somebody can't go in and say, oh, I wonder what Carrie Kaufman has been Googling. What's she working on, right? If I'm a lawyer, that's even more scary.
Right, or all the telemedicine that's going on,
right.
All the unemployment filings.
Yes.
Yeah, there's so much information on your computer.
Yes. So the for now, and I'm digging into this more and doing some tests and we're going to be doing reporting on this. But for now, my message is, when you're not on Google Classroom, when you're not doing actual classroom work or your homework, which you kind of need Google Classroom for, sign off. Just sign off. Just remember to sign off.
And right. At the end of the day, dismissal, teachers, please remind the kids, sign out.
Yes. Yes. And what bothers me about this is what bothers me about CCSD in general is that they haven't communicated this to the parents. And they don't communicate anything to parents. As you said, people are going to show up. And that's I think that's part of it is people just aren't there to get the message. But part of it is I'm a pretty open person. I sit through CCSD meetings and I get all the press releases. And I had never heard that we were using Go Guardian before until this last CCSD meeting. And Danielle Ford said something that I missed, and Channel 3 picked it up and did a story on it, and then it went viral among my kids' friends.
Oh, yeah, we all got very confused after Ford mentioned it. And I'm glad she did, because it led to a lot of digging about, well, we don't want to say we're doing one thing and then be doing something completely different, which is what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was Go Guardian in place in the spring, do you know?
I believe it was, yes.
Okay, because in the spring, I remember hearing Jenny's stories about that, you know, she had to make some calls and talk to some parents and embarrass some parents for being on these websites. But I just thought that was like a Google history. I had no idea it was affiliated with a larger program.
Yeah.
That was designed to search for words and algorithms.
Yes.
You know?
When principals get in the morning, they have a whole list of websites that have been flagged. And they have a list of websites that students tried to get into and were blocked. And
now they need a whole lot more principals to go through that.
Truly. I actually heard of one principal of a high school who came in one day and saw that there were like 200 students in his school who were Googling about suicide. And he had the presence of mind to say, are these people in the same class? And it turned out they were. And it was Suicide Prevention Week. And
oh, thank God.
The teacher had forgotten to alert him to that. But he saw that. They saw that.
Well, and that's it. Ultimately, I think educators are very responsible for our kids and they want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's just total miscommunication from the top to the bottom here, from superintendents down to parents, down to students.
Yes.
This exists for a good purpose. Its implementation is questionable.
I totally agree with that. But also, I do wonder, especially with teachers who complain about being retaliated against, how this kind of thing can be used.
Well, a million and one apps. I mean, I use the Remind app to talk to teachers. And then teachers who really want to dish will text privately because they will say, look, everything on Remind my principal can read. So it's not new being monitored by admin.
It is not new. We will talk about CCSD again next week. We talk about CCSD on every show, but school is starting on Monday, and I think I will be at a school with a microphone to see how the rollout goes and see if people actually show up for in-person school. And we will talk further on this. Rebecca Colbert, thank you for being with me today.
Sure. I hope next week we have nothing but success stories to talk about.
I do too.
As we head into the election season, I want to assure this committee and the American public that the Postal Service is fully capable and committed to delivering the nation's election mail securely and on time. This sacred duty is my number one priority between now and Election Day.
That was Postmaster General Louis DeJoy speaking with the first of the congressional committees that are investigating the Postal Service. DeJoy told the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee that it was all a big misunderstanding, that he was carrying out plans to take sorters offline and retire blue boxes that had been put in place before he was even hired. Nevada Senator Jackie Rosen is a member of that committee, and she grilled Postmaster DeJoy pretty hard.
Small towns across Nevada, from Gabs, who has a population of 269 people, to Shores, it's a tribal community with 658 people, some of my larger rural communities, that's all they get is the Postal Service. So please, could you answer yes or no? Effort of time. Before developing and implementing policy changes since assuming your role this year, did you conduct any specific analysis on how your changes would impact seniors? Yes or no, sir?
So, ma'am, the policy changes that I...
Yes or no, sir?
The policy changes that I embarked upon were not the ones that you identified in your...
So you didn't do any analysis to see how seniors would be impacted. Okay, let's move on.
Senator Rosen, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So do you believe DeJoy? Was this just a misunderstanding?
You know what? It was not whether or not I believed DeJoy. He didn't commit to being transparent. He didn't commit to, you know, this is the post office. This isn't classified information. He should be showing us his meetings, his minutes, his basis, his analysis, what he based it on. If he doesn't have it, then he didn't do his due diligence. And if he doesn't know what's going on the ground, the buck stops at his desk. So I held his feet to the fire. We need to know, because my postal workers, right down, I don't live too far from the general mail facility right over here on Sunset Road in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And he's taking sorters offline and the mail's piling up. So let him, if he's not sure what's happening where he lives, I'm glad to show him about what's happening where I live.
So you grill him on the data, which I thought was really interesting. I find this when women especially ask men for the specifics, their answer is, I don't know. And why are you beating up on me?
Women, we know we have to do our homework. I've never walked into a meeting or design. I wrote computer software. Design software systems. And still to this day, I don't walk into a meeting without knowing the facts behind why I did what I did. And I expect nothing less from anyone in government, anyone in this administration. He's the Postmaster General. He should know the mission of the post office, that it's a civil service, that it's to get mail out to the last mile, that it's in Article 1 of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. Even our framers knew how important it would be to get things delivered across this great country. They couldn't imagine how big we would grow at the time, but they still knew how important it was. It's right there in Article 1. Mr. DeJoy hasn't read his constitution.
So let's clear things up in terms of the next few months with the post office. Blue boxes that we've seen being taken away, what's going to happen to them?
Well, you know what? My team already this morning, well, we've been working behind the scenes because obviously I'm on the Homeland Security and Government Oversight Committee. So that's why that comes within our purview. We're trying to find out every bit of information that we can about what's happening with the blue boxes that you see on street corners all across America, what's happening particularly in our rural communities. We have very small rural communities up and down Nevada. They depend on this mail for their prescriptions. You know, I had a veteran call my office in the last hour right here in Las Vegas and say, thank you, thank you, thank you. I finally feel like someone's worrying about me and my medication. And so people are paying attention. So what we're going to do is we're going to deliver to him a comprehensive list of the data that we want to see that he based these decisions on. Let's do the analysis. Let's support the post office where we need to and make changes where we need to. Mindful of the mission of the post office was to deliver the mail to every person in America 6 days a week, week in and week out.
So even Senator Rob Portman, who is a Republican from Ohio, said that mail had been slowed in his state, and he told a story of a constituent who didn't get their medicine. Are you clear that that mail service started with DeJoy, or did it mail service slowing started with DeJoy, or did it start before that?
Well, I can tell you that since he's been the Postmaster General, I've received over 1,000 emails or contacts, phone calls every week since he started about problems with postal delivery. So maybe that's a coincidence, maybe not. I think I've received nearly 10,000 emails just about the post office.
Wow.
I received 7,000 emails a week. One week during the beginning of COVID, I had 15,000 emails a week. So people call us and they write us. They even get regular mail. Even imagine that. People write me letters. Kids send me cards. Okay. And so the mail is not just about our prescriptions and Social Security checks. Who doesn't love that birthday card? Remember when you're a little kid and your nan or papa would send you that like a $10 bill? For me, I was a younger, you get a $10 bill in that card. It was so exciting. The mail, not just a bill, but who doesn't wait for the holiday catalogs? Sometimes the mail brings us joy too, right?
Yes.
It makes us feel connected. And it really is a service that is a wonderful service. If you'll indulge me, I want to share a story that from a letter carrier, or the rural letter carriers in particular, shared with me. They go to these remote places, and oftentimes they are the only contact that people have, even in urban areas, with the outside. And so sometimes they know their routes really well, and they know someone's a senior on the route. They come out and they talk to them. Suddenly they can see that the mail's been piling up and nobody's there. They actually do well checks on people. They've called out of concern. they touch people's lives. And they tell me these stories over and over again, our postal workers, and with tears in their eyes, how much they care about getting the mail to the folks on time. And I don't think people realize how personal it is.
Let's go back to the things that have been in the news that we've been worried about. Mail sorters, many of them were taken out offline, destroyed, which I found interesting. And postal carriers were told that they couldn't do overtime. They couldn't go back out and
late trips, make sure. Late afternoon trips.
So is that going to change?
Well, I hope so. He said that he's not going to, what we want him to do is roll back any changes that have been implemented since he's been there. And so he said he's committed not to making any more changes. That's not good enough for me. It's not good enough for most of us. We want him to go back to the way things were prior to him becoming Postmaster General. I'm glad to help him do the analysis. I know we got a lot of talented people to do that. And let's figure out what we might need to do going forward. But we need to be sure that we have a good election, that our post office has the ability to deliver that, deliver those results, and deliver everything else that we, particularly in a pandemic, really need. Our supplies, goods and services, medications, checks, you name it. And one thing we didn't touch on is late fees. If you mail your bills in with a check and the mail slowed down, you could get a late fee because they've slowed down your mail. Well, that impacts working families through no fault of their own. They think they mailed something in time a week ahead. And I just want to protect everyone to be sure that our mail service is good, intact, and responsive.
So most of the people that I have talked to are worried more about the slowing down of ballots, that they cite that the Postal Service has said that they aren't going to be giving ballots a priority as they have in the past, that they're going to be considering them bulk mail. Is he promising to change that? Is that just a myth and that hasn't been changed?
You know, in the hearing, he's promised to change that. We need to hold him accountable to that. In the public eye, I will tell you that it is a cherished right for every active registered voter to be able to submit their vote and have their vote count. So right now we have a pandemic. We want to be sure that people feel safe. They can mail in their ballots if that's what they choose. We still want to keep that robust early voting. I know, Carrie, you know this. 60% of people in Nevada vote early vote. If they want to do that in person, they can do that and still allow the day of. We want to give everybody the chance for their vote to count. Every elected official should want that. Every citizen should want that. And I can't understand why our Postmaster General would want to delegitimize or have people lose confidence in the post office ability to help with that. With our elections, that just seems wrong and outrageous.
Okay, so you're getting to something that is the elephant in the room here, which is the reason that people are so worried, because the post office has slowed down, and because they're taking things offline, is that President Trump has said, well, if the post office doesn't work, then people can't do mail-in voting, and he doesn't want people to do mail-in voting. So whether DeJoy is doing anything wrong or not, the fact that the president points to it and says, yeah, that's going to help me, that's what has people worried.
Right, because Postmaster General DeJoy is clearly enabling what he's hearing. He doesn't have to speak to President Trump on the phone or in the Oval Office. He's watching his tweets, he's watching his campaign rallies, and he's watching what the president said, slow down the mail, right? The mail's rigged, it's all whatever he says every day, he seems to say many tweets about all this. And so we can't allow the president to have us lose confidence and delegitimize our elections, delegitimize our post office, have us lose confidence in our institutions. And we have to hold anybody who's enabling that to happen, we have to hold their feet to the fire.
So your colleague Susie Lee held a press conference the other day in front of that main post office that you talked about. And I should note, for everybody who lives in Vegas probably knows this, but that main post office is also right across the street from the airport. So it's not the best place to hold a press conference, but it's kind of fun standing there. Anyway, here's what Congresswoman Lee had to say.
You know, this administration basically, their big claim is they wanted to turn a profit. You know, in order to send a letter to Laughlin or Boulder, you know, or Searchlight, if you did it all for profit, it could cost $17, $18. Now we do it for 55 cents.
What is the post office job in our democracy and in our economy?
Well, like I said, the post office is was laid out by the framers of the Constitution that it was a government's job to, I believe it's post route, postal, post routes and post roads. So we would have roads and ways to deliver, mail, packages, whatever. They were doing it on the Pony Express maybe back then, by horse, whatever. And so our framers knew how important it was, and they knew it was a civil service to get to that last mile. So yes, the post office is a business. You know, the post office doesn't receive tax dollars for operating expenses. They make all their operating expenses on the sales of their services, their stamps, their postal products, et cetera, et cetera. And so if something's purely a business and purely for profit, will they go that last mile? You heard that perhaps you're thinking about charging people more in Alaska or Hawaii. So do veterans in Alaska get their prescription or Hawaii? Are they less than? Are they second-class citizens? And so the post office is a service to our country. We have to be mindful of that, support it where we can, and understand it's not in the business of profit making. It's to be able to be sure that small towns, we've got a few of them in Nevada, a few hundred residents, and you talk about frontier land in Alaska, you talk about islands of Hawaii, I mean, all across this country, I could, top of Maine all the way down. We have small communities. We need our post office, and it's nothing could be more important than that. And it's a very American. We need to hang on to it.
DeJoyce started the hearing calling for the Postal Service to be cost efficient. He cited a $10 million shortfall as proof that we are not self-sustaining. And he wants to move the retirement plan for postal workers to Medicare. There's a larger story here, which is that we had to prepay the retirement of postal workers who aren't even old enough to work yet, right?
I think we have to fund the Postal Service retirement 50 years in advance, not even knowing the workforce, not even knowing the changes. It's really kind of an undue burden. And so I do think there is some analysis, and there have been people who've been trying to tear apart the post office for years. Congress needs to take their job seriously, both sides of the aisle, and try to really figure out how we make this work. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to read to you something. I think it's a good close for people who want to know this. The Postal Service, they have a mission statement. And if you'll indulge me, I will tell you the mission statement. And this is what we need to be mindful of: to serve the American people and through universal service obligation, bind our nation together by maintaining and operating our unique, vital, and resilient infrastructure. To provide trusted, safe, and secure communications and services between our government and the American people, businesses and their customers, and the American people with each other. To serve all areas of our nation, making full use of evolving technologies. Mr. DeJoy and everyone else should read the mission statement of the Post Office, do what we can to protect it and let it serve our nation the way it was intended.
Nevada Senator Jackie Rosen is a member of the committee that talked to Louis DeJoy, the Postmaster General, on Friday morning. Senator Rosen, thank you very much for being with us.
Anytime. My pleasure. Thank you.
I just want to say that I've been a critic of the Postal Service in the past. When I published a newspaper with timely audition information in Chicago, our biggest issue was non-delivery or late delivery. We were periodicals class mail, but we were a newspaper, not a glossy. And we were told that sometimes the carriers just didn't think it was worth anything, so they didn't deliver it. But I got my junk mail, which advertisers pay highly for, right on time, every single day. I've talked to other publishers in cities like D.C., Detroit, San Francisco, and they told me they dealt with the same thing. In Las Vegas, the mail seems to work pretty well. I am really surprised when someone says, oh, it's just across town, it'll be there by tomorrow. And then it is. I can assure you, in Chicago, a decade or so ago, that was not the case. There are certainly inefficiencies in the post office, and whether or not government should run as a business is one of the big questions of our time. It may be that Postmaster DeJoy came in and innocently started implementing changes for sound business reasons, but it is a measure of our collective fear that Americans immediately jumped to the conclusion that it was an attempt to tamper with the election. And Trump, with his statements, stoked that fear. Impact is co-produced by Nevada Voice, which is a nonprofit reporting project. We are working with KUNV on a number of projects beyond this weekly show, including a deep dive into race and how it works in people's lives. We are writing grants, and we welcome your support through our Patreon page at patreon.com/impactKUNV. We will share with you behind-the-scenes conversations and extended interviews. Give what you can to keep good journalism happening in Las Vegas. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and I appreciate you listening. This is Impact. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The Nevada legislature, at the beginning of this month, passed a bill allowing ballots to be mailed directly to the homes of every registered voter. President Trump promptly sued over the bill, which we talked about on our August 8th show. But how are the logistics of this going to work? When should people expect their ballots? When should they worry if they haven't gotten them? And how can they make sure their ballots get back to where they need to be? Answering those questions for us today are two people involved in voting logistics, Sandra Cosgrove, head of the Nevada League of Women Voters, and Cecia Alvarado, state director from Mi Familia Vota. Welcome both of you to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, Sandra, you're the person I go to when I'm scared and I need facts. So this is why you're on. I'm scared. People are scared. Which I think is the point, to be perfectly honest. It really doesn't matter if the postal system is slowed down or not. They think it's slowed down. And so that makes them worried. Can you reassure people?
Yes. And I'm so happy that Cecia is on here, because I think different communities have different levels of fear and different things they're afraid of. And so to make sure we're getting like the 360 view, it's good that you're talking to both of us.
Yes.
Because I kind of get the garden variety fear. And so people are worried about, you know, if I put my ballot in my mailbox, is, you know, Sam, my mailman, is he going to be able to deliver it? What I would say is, as soon as you get your ballot, decide whether you're going to vote in person or whether you're going to vote with the paper ballot. If you're going to vote with the paper ballot, try to get it filled out as quickly as you possibly can. Get it in that envelope, sign it, make sure it's all sealed up, and then look in your sample ballot and find the closest in-person voting location where you can go and put it in a drop box. Don't even do anything with the post office, because that drop box will be maintained by the elections department.
Okay, so hang on a second, though. I'm going to get a sample ballot first, and then I'm going to get a ballot?
You'll get both probably about the same time.
Okay, so that confused people in the primary. I mean, there were people who got their sample ballot and were like, is this my ballot? Am I supposed to vote with this? So how are we messaging to people to know that one is an actual ballot and one is a sample ballot?
The sample ballot will look like a booklet. And it's going to have maps for where the in-person voting is going to be. It's going to have about the days and the times, where your ballot will be one piece of paper.
Okay. Cecia, this is, it occurs to me that this is how terrorism works, right? You don't actually have to do anything. You just have to create a credible fear that something may be done. How is the Latino Hispanic community reacting to this perhaps attempted voter suppression?
Absolutely, Carrie. I think it's a community that is used to being under attack. It's used to those scare tactics by any administration, by coming at us in so many different directions. We are used to this. this is an opportunity for a community right now that has been left out of a relief, that has been left out of the conversation with the COVID-19 and has been affected directly. And the most impacted are communities of colors, especially our Latino community has been impacted the most by this pandemic.
Indeed.
So this is an opportunity for my community, for our community to participate in the general election. The fear has always been there. We are here to inform the community. We are here to educate them. The reaction, the Latino community wants to vote. They want to turn out and vote. We have been receiving calls of people asking us how the process is going to work because they want to make sure that they cast their ballot this November. Mm-hmm. So there is a more excitement and enthusiasm from our community than fear, which we haven't really seen before.
And what are you doing to make sure that people know that they can go vote and where they can vote?
Absolutely. We have to, Familia Volta, we have to kind of do it backwards right now. We have to make sure people are registered to vote. We launched a 1-800 number, and I have personally taken a few of those calls, and the questions had been around vote by mail. People that did not receive their ballot during the primary election. Wow. We went in and verified, make sure that they have their name spelled correctly, their address. We found some of those folks that were calling us, maybe they were missing an apartment number. So we teach them how to look up their voter registration, how to update it. That's the first part. Like, they want to make sure that, one, their voter registration is active, and then two, how do we do it? Where do we go? What to expect? Those are some of the questions that we are getting right now.
Okay, so you're going to tell me right now, what's that 800 number?
So it's 1-800. I only know the 1-800 Votamos. I will give you the number in a minute.
Okay.
I have to figure it out. It's 1-800-VOTAMOS. It's in Spanish, but I'll give you the number in a minute.
Okay. Votamos is fine with me. I want to go back to this June primary, Sandra. 30% turnout for a primary, which is pretty high, actually. It sounds low, but it's pretty high. Most of that was mail-in. The Trump administration is talking about voter fraud. Was there any voter fraud in this mail-in primary?
So I want to give a shout out to Cecia's team that are doing those 1-800 calls, because mm-hmm. every so often they email me and they're like, quick, I need to give this person an answer. Help me research this. So I mean, they're a crack team. I'm really impressed with them.
Good. Yay.
But I've read through the lawsuit that was just filed, and surprisingly, compared to the lawsuit filed during the primary, this one does not talk about voter fraud very much. It talks about a lot of 14th Amendment equal protection violations. So I'm not exactly sure what they're doing with this one, probably just slowing things down. But to answer your question, there was confusion. There was some confusion. There were some long lines, and there were problems we had during the primary. Fraud was not one of them. Mm-hmm. Because the process that we have set up, your signature has to be verified or that ballot is not getting counted.
So we saw pictures, and you and I have talked about this before, we saw pictures of ballots sitting in apartment lobbies. And it strikes me that if they're sitting in the apartment lobbies, then they're not being turned in for fraudulent votes. So why were they sitting around, and what can we do about that next time?
Part of the problem is there is lower voter turnout in the primary. So even if you look at people who were active registered voters, they still had 90,000 ballots come back to the election department because people just don't participate in high numbers for the primary. Mm. The other thing is they sent out a bunch of ballots to inactive voters. And so they sent out way too many ballots to people who were very low propensity, not going to vote. And so a lot of them came back. I mean, I'm most kind of upset about that because it was a waste of money. But I mean, so Carrie, if you my ballot, do I sign my name with a cursive S or a printed S? So you would need to know that
right.
in order to be able to cast my ballot.
Right.
So one other thing that's going to be different for the general election is the whole ballot collection thing.
Yeah.
So they changed it. Before, let's say that Cecia was my sister. I could say, oh, my legs are broken. Can you go drop my ballot off? And she could do it, no problem. But Cecia is just my good friend, the way the law was before, she couldn't go drop it because she's not related to me. Mm-hmm. Now I say, but I trust Cecia, so I'm going to lick my ballot and close it and sign it. I can hand it to her and she can deliver it and not be in trouble. where Barbara and the governor are squaring off is Barbara saying fine.
Barbara Sigaski, who's the Secretary of State. Okay.
She's asking for regulations to say if you're going to pick up more than 10 ballots, that she would like you to fill out an online form saying if you're with a union or you're a political operative or whatever, so that they can track if those ballots disappear.
Okay, that's fair.
Which I actually think it is, because for the average person, like you say, if I'm homebound because my legs are broken and Ceci is my neighbor and I'm like, Ceci, I need help. And she's going to say, sure, that right. should be fine.
Yeah.
Right.
And also, if for people with disabilities, if same example, if I can't read and write and I ask Sandra to help me, we can do that. You have to be 65 and older.
Or have a disability. And then she and I write a statement saying that she asked and I helped her. And then the statement goes in the envelope.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can have other people fill out, help you with your ballot, help you fill out your ballot, or help you deliver your ballot to a voting location.
Also, the deadline for our tribes to request a ballot have been extended, right, Professor Crossman?
Yeah. Yeah, so they're going to get extra machines that are going to be on the reservation.
You mentioned that the drop boxes, like you are advocating, like Michelle Obama did at the DNC, to, you know, just ignore the mail. Just go take your ballot and put it in a drop box. Do we have any idea how many drop boxes Clark County is going to have for this election?
So it's actually on page 16 of AB4, because I made sure I looked it up. There has to be a drop box at the elections department. They can put drop boxes at any other government office that's opened. And every in-person voting site has to have one.
Oh, so how many?
Is that what you found too, Cecia? Is that what you found too? Okay, yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Okay. So that's good to know. So, and we're thinking about the last I saw, Clark County Clerk Joe Gloria was saying that we were going to have about 170 voting sites. Is that still correct?
Yes.
Okay. And
yes. So it should be close to normal.
Are we going to have early voting?
Yes. Same early voting, the 2 weeks of early voting. What's going to be different is they won't have as many machines because they're going to have to do social distancing.
Right.
So it'll be half, same number of sites, half the number of machines. And so that's why Joe really wanted to make sure everybody got that mail-in ballot too.
Okay.
So that if for any reason you want to vote from home, you can.
Okay. So you can vote from home. You can put it in the post box. The Postal Service assures us that it will get there. But if you're too close to the election, definitely go to one of the vote centers or any public building and put it in a drop box. And if you're just afraid, just go put it in a drop box. That's what you're telling people.
Yes.
When I have not seen my ballot arrive yet, of course, it's only August. So when are these ballots going to arrive?
So Jasmine from Cessia's team actually emailed me today, and we looked it up in NRS, Nevada Revised Statute. The ballots need to arrive 45 days before the election for military, 40 days if you're out of state, and 20 days in state. So that's going to be about October 12th, 13th, or 14th. But now, Joe Gloria, every time I've heard him speak in the last little while, they're going to try and get them out as soon as possible. But they need to be out by the 14th. They need to be in our hands by the 14th.
Of October.
October. So about when early voting starts.
Yes,
basically like the deadline. Yeah, it's basically the deadline. So it's not saying that you won't get it before, like you'll get it by. So you're still, I mean, they're trying to get a ballot to everybody before October 14th.
Cecia, early voting is very popular in the Hispanic community. And I remember in 2016, 2018, there were long lines, like on the last day of early voting. What are you doing to get people to vote even earlier than the last day?
Well, this is it's going to be a very unique election. In any regular election, we encourage people to go vote early because you can go to any location. Because, you know, this is a community that works two jobs, that works different schedules. Some of them work night shifts.
Right.
So we want to make sure that that does not interfere with their ability to go vote. Don't leave it to last minute. So now, you know, we are going to focus on educating the community to vote by mail for their safety. But the options are still there. All of the options to vote are still on the table. We can still do early vote, which we will have about 23 polling locations. What we're doing is the same thing, encouraging people to go vote early, avoid the big lines. Mm-hmm. And also, like, for those that may have to make, like, do some of those corrections and maybe your move, like, you can also register on election day. Like, you can register the day off if you show up to the polls. So that's the, we're just giving people all of their options and encourage them to utilize early vote as their number one, you know, option if they don't vote by mail.
So you mentioned,
and that's a really good point she made.
Yeah.
So let's say your ballot doesn't show up. You can go into any polling location, and if they, let's say Cecia came in and I'm like, oh, Cecia, I don't see that you're registered to vote. I would say, let's register you right now, because we have same day voter registration.
We do.
Yes.
And you can vote. You could register online up until the day up until November 3rd. You can also go to an early voting location and register there, correct?
Yes. And if you want to vote the same day, you need to bring your ID.
Okay. Cecia, one more question. You mentioned that COVID, and we've reported on this, that COVID-19 has hit the Hispanic Latino community hard in this city. Are people afraid of going out to vote because of that? Are there, how is that intermingling here?
Honestly, the biggest fear is for them not to vote. There is a fear for COVID because we all fear for our safety. But they know how much is at stake during this election. The community is ready to show up.
And the last question I have for you is, we are voting, but there's also a census taking place. When I give statistics about the Hispanic Latino population in this state, I say at least 30%, because I've talked to too many people who say that there is probably an undercount. So what are you doing to get people to fill out the census?
Yes, we need it. That's a really good, important and very important point. What are we doing? Education, it's our number one tactic. We have been reaching our community by phone, text messages, and Mi Familia Vota is running a patient support program to help the families that are being affected by COVID-19, either presumed positive or immune compromised. We deliver food to them once a week. So we have this program, and we're even doing inserts, and every grocery box goes out not only with their groceries, but also with information on how to fill out the census, how to vote, how to register to vote. So all of that information goes in every food drive that we are part of, and we're partnering with our Latino businesses as well to have posters and information. So we're doing that with the census. We are, when we're making wellness calls to those patients, we're asking them if they filled out their census, using a partnership with the media. So every tactic and every way possible to get our community counted.
Cecia Alvarado is the state director for Mi Familia Vota. And Sandra Cosgrove, who you heard earlier, is the head of the Nevada League of Women Voters. She's also a history professor at CSN, and you hear her frequently on this program. Guys, thanks for joining me. I very, very much appreciate this.
Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you, Carrie.
And go vote. This is Impact. I'm Carrie Coffey.
Thank you.
Well, another episode of Impact has come and gone. Impact is a co-production of Nevada Voice and KUNV. You can also find the show in individual clips on Apple Podcasts or impact.simplecast.com. Or you can go to the Nevada Voice Facebook page. Thanks to all of our guests who went postal with me this week, including Senator Jackie Rosen, Congresswoman Susie Lee, Sandra Cosgrove from the League of Women Voters, Cecia Alvarado from Mi Familia Vota, and Rebecca Colbert, who is a librarian by trade and therefore is an incredibly well-informed person. We started the show with the classic Marvelettes song, Mr. Postman, and you are now listening to the late, great Ella Fitzgerald with this legendary performance, of Airmail Special. We will be back next week. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Thank you for listening to Impact.
Day delight and I want to go home. Mama, look at Boo Boo Day. Shut your mouth, go away. Mama, look at Boo Boo Da. Hush your mouth, go away. When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. I hear.